Well, it's my life, basically. It's like being in my living room, and what I do is talk to the people about the film that I have, that I use a remote control to start and stop, and I tell them stories that nobody's heard before, vaccine stories and what went on with the people and how everybody reacts and stuff like that. It's very interesting. And then after that, I open the whole show to questions and answers, and they can ask me anything they want.
Is there a question or questions that come to you again and again in the Q&A? Are there things that people always want to know about?
Yeah, I was sort of amazed. I've done about 10 of these, that's all. What I did was miss the live audience, so I put this together so I could hear what was on people's minds and feel a live audience again. And what struck me was after the show is over and I opened up to questions, they're almost all about my books, about their own spiritual journeys and what to make of reincarnation and what to make of UFOs and what to make of their own kind of meditations and what's happening and a lot of stuff about 2012, which I've done a great deal of study on. So at least from my point of view, I think I know what it's all about. By the way, the latest solar flares are just the beginning. It's all about how to deal with yourself, basically, when you have disturbances on the outside. That's basically what it is. It's interesting to people.
When you first sort of came out of the spiritual closet, if you will, in the 1980s with your books like Out on a Limb, you, as you are obviously aware, you did become the butt of a lot of jokes at the time.
No, not really. I love the jokes as long as they were funny. I used to help Johnny Carson write them.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Because all I cared about was that they're funny. Not that I didn't, I didn't find them harsh or humiliating at all, really. And neither were the people who said them. I mean, they know I mean it. And by the way, they kind of sensed that somewhere along the line it would all be, you know, basically in the main culture in a few years anyway. And that's exactly what's happened. So, well, I'm in a parking jam here, and this guy is, see, this is what I mean, very, very road ragey. Well, that was interesting.
And what city are you in?
I'm in L.A. because I just got back from Downton Abbey, and I landed in California. My goodness me, places with sun are a paradise. Because when you're in London for a while, or 150 miles outside of London or stuff like that, you really do appreciate the sun, even if you're baking in it. So I'm glad to be back.
Well, tell us a little bit about the experience of filming for Downton Abbey. This show has generated an enormous fan base in America through public television, and I've had more people come to me to talk about Downton Abbey than I've ever seen for any other show that we've had on our Channel 6 here.
It's really fantastic. We sat around the table at the Downton Abbey set. We were shooting at Highclere Castle. Oh, my God. 11 bedrooms on the first floor, 13 on the second floor. And by the way, the man who built Highclere Castle, which is where we were shooting Downton Abbey, he's the one, Lord Carnarvon, who discovered the King Tut excavation in Egypt. We talked about that around the dinner table, and Maggie Smith and I have known each other for years, so that wasn't, it was a rekindling of a relationship and a friendship. That was fun. I just think she's the best. And all of the other people, we shot outside in the rain, in the snow, in the wind. I mean, it is, after all, a television series.
I know you said that you couldn't tease the storyline for us too much, but can you tell us about your character?
Well, people like to think it's me going in and basically exploding a bombshell and going like the gun at the OK Corral with Maggie Smith. But my character does do a bit of that because I'm an American thrown in with these English of royalty personages. And she and I do have our headstrong moments together, let's put it that way. But my character is there for a reason that I can't really disclose. That wouldn't be fair. But just know that the two personalities, Maggie Smith and me, and the rest of the very well brought up English people. And, you know, they have on the set every minute a royal protocol set advisor as to how far you should bend over when serving the soup, how many inches away from the plate the fork should be, things like that. I mean, to live in a royal world in England must be very claustrophobic. So I learned a lot from the royal protocol director, and I actually began to behave myself, believe it or not.
Well, was it perhaps part of the effect that the wardrobe and hair and makeup had on you? How do you feel in the skin of your character?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. The wardrobe is unbelievably precise and gorgeous, and I was with them. What they did was come to California, and we clothed my character in things they got from an old warehouse that had 1920 clothes in it. So they're all very authentic, done over because they had to be repaired, but otherwise they're the real thing. And it was a joy to wear them. I gained weight because the caterer was so good. The wig is good. And the makeup and the hair, and those people sit in the makeup trailer for long hours making certain that they're precisely like it happened in 1920.
What was the big appeal for you in taking the role in the first place? Was it the opportunity to work with Maggie Smith?
Well, sure. And I had been watching Downton Abbey and was an obsessed fan myself, as is everyone else who sees it. We were trying to figure out why. What is this all about? And I had long talks with Julian Fellowes about it. What is it that's made people so obsessed with this show? And the third season is even better, I can tell you that. I mean, there's not much that doesn't happen to them. And so we, as the audience, begin to we participate in what they go through. Really fabulous.